Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
All right, we're in. Now I can actually eat something. All
right. Bring in the cadaver.
Heritage Craft Butchers in Mariana, Pennsylvania. I'm with my buddies Bob and Jared. They're gonna show us how to butcher a pig today. But we can't do that on an empty stomach, so basically right now we're gonna try some of this amazing sliced meat while they tell us a little bit about their stories. So guys, how did this all happen?
Well, I guess I can get started. So my wife and I moved down to a small farm, a homestead, if you will, in Greene County, Pennsylvania, about 6 years ago. And we started raising, you know, pigs, ducks, chickens, just sort of self-taught, like how to break them down and turn them into value-added products like what you have on the board here. We did that for a year or so, and then reconnected with a guy, Wes, who was my roommate for one semester in college. He just found me on Facebook one day and sent me a message and said, "Hey, I've always wanted to slaughter a pig and turn it into all the stuff, you know?" And I was like, "Well, today is your lucky day." And then along the way, through a mutual friend of Wes and myself, met Jared, and Jared's a forager? That was your claim to fame.
That was my main occupation, yeah.
Yeah.
Forager, hunter, yeah.
Yeah, so our friend Jamie, you know, said, "Hey, I'd like to come down to your house, you know, maybe have something to eat, just talk about the farm and everything, and do you mind if I bring my friend who's a forager?" And I was, of course, like, "Sure, knock yourself out, bring whoever you want."
Bring that weirdo.
Yeah, and I had an image in my head of what just Jamie's friend, the forager, was. And it was
pretty
rad. It was not that far off. Yeah. Oh, did we have the bison testicles?
Yeah, bison testicles.
Cured duck eggs and some other stuff. And
deconstructed bison.
Just sort of.
So which one of these was the bison testicles?
None of those. That was a one and done
project. Good,
it yeah? wasn't bad, yeah.
It was real good.
That year, I got, you know, another pig for Wes, got a pig for Jared. Unfortunately, you know, 9-10 months go by, and Jared's pig didn't actually grow at all. So Jared's pig started off this big and ended up, you know, this big.
You gave him a pot belly, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. What was his name? Dookie?
Yeah, that was his name.
Yep. So, you know, we got to the end of that year, and we were making Italian-style charcuterie, Spanish-style charcuterie.
In an old barn?
In a barn.
Oh, cool.
We had built, you know, curing chambers out of old refrigerators. We butchered all those animals. We made salamis and copas and prosciuttos and got them all hung up there and had sort of that realization at the end of it of, like, we have thousands of pounds of cured meats that we're going to eat, like, an ounce at a time. And there's no way we're ever going to finish it. And we'd like to do this again next year, like keep it going. But we can't do it at this volume. So we were like, "Hey, why don't we open a butcher shop?" bourbon involved. Yeah, there's a lot of bourbon involved.
A little bit.
All right, so you have this huge stash of stuff you guys have been, you know, experimenting with, trying out, and you decided the only way we're going to be able to do this again is if we sell some of this because there's too much.
Correct.
Where do you go from there?
Well, we're looking at buildings.
Logically, you should tell your wife that you've made this decision. I thought that I did. We started looking for buildings until this old bank popped up in the weekly email from the real estate agent. It was affordable. I mean, it was a cheap building, had a vault. It seemed like it was in reasonable condition. And then you just sort of, you take it piecemeal. You know, being the general contractor for a renovation of turning a bank into a butcher shop is not, it's not a turnkey operation. So,
yeah, anywhere we would be, we would have an extreme overhead to turn any building into what we wanted it to be.
Yeah.
So we found this building was very cheap, and we kind of walked in and saw
how it was going to be laid out.
We were immediately, it was the first building, we were like, and we'll knock down that wall, and that'll be the cutting room, and it just kind of was a no-brainer.
When I walked in, I was like taken aback by how beautiful it looks. But what really surprised me was, as we're touring the facility, looking where we're going to film today, this cutting room is surrounded by thick glass. I thought that was a health code thing. I'm thinking, oh, they got to have people watching the cutting. They got to be behind glass. Buying a bank worked out perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's the bullet-resistant acrylic panes of glass that were already there. And it was just a pragmatic thing. It was like, I still don't know how we would actually remove those if we wanted to. So it just worked at, by leaving them there, it created a barrier from, you know, the retail area and the production area.
See how the sausage gets made.
Yeah. I mean, that's, a lot of it was just transparency to, we want people to come in and watch us do things. There's nothing that's hidden and away from public view because, you know, the process was interesting to us. I mean, that's what we got started doing, was just like the mechanics of it, the process and the ingredients. So being able to share that with people, regular customers. I mean, even like with the butchery clinics and the different events that we have, a lot of it is just based on giving away all the secrets, you know? I mean, something from days of yore of the whole like, oh, there's a secret ingredient, if I told you, I'd have to kill you type of thing. It's like, no, I mean, I'll teach anybody how to make sausage or bacon or prosciutto or whatever. These are salamis that are fermenting. They're not all that pretty yet. We inoculate. This machine is a proofing cabinet. This is where you would make you would raise bread. You'd put dough in there and it would ferment and it would fluff up and everything like that. What we do is when we make salami is we inoculate the mix with a culture of lactobacillus bacteria. And then there's some sugar in the cure. There's some red wine, there's some dextrose or whatever. That bacteria will eat that sugar and produce lactic acid. So whenever you eat salami, and it kind of tastes like garlicky but tangy, like a little bit of a sour flavor, that's lactic acid. So what we're doing in there is cultivating the bacteria that make...
Is the lactic acid bad?
No, it's good.
No.
Botulism. C. botulinum bacteria, what gives you food poisoning?
Real bad.
Doesn't grow in acidic environments, it doesn't grow in oxygenated environments, and it doesn't...
Isn't that like everywhere on the earth?
Right, except whenever if you do canning, like if you can green beans, you're removing all the oxygen from the can, so you have an anaerobic environment, and green beans aren't naturally acidic, so you have to either add acid to it or pressure can them to kill the spores. By fermenting these, they become acidic, it drops the pH, and by doing that, it prevents botulism from growing in that sausage. So it's basically one of the steps to preventing food poisoning. That's why once they're done here and we hang them in that room, they can hang in there at 55 degrees for 6 months without turning like into poison, basically, more or less.
Yeah.
You know what, if you go off and just make it yourself, great. but nobody's going
to sell you a leg.
If you want to go buy a bank somewhere and open a meat shop, more power to you. It's probably not going to work out for you, but you'll be back. You'll be back.
It's so. just the culture of what we're trying to do here with all the local foods, trying to bring in all these local animals, these heritage animals, and show people the process. The people, our customers are different than people that are just going to go to Walmart and get their meat. So they kind of want that more interactive. They want to see exactly how everything's being made and how we're cutting it up.
One of the things we had to learn really early on running our farm business back in Connecticut was your customer is not the person going into Walmart. That's such a good point. When you guys are looking for customers, who do you find coming through the door and coming back through the door? What's your kind of customer? What do they care about?
The locality is a big deal. You know, you drove here through cow fields. I mean, you saw how many cows on your way here, sheep, lambs all out in the field. There's no reason we shouldn't be eating those animals as opposed to animals that have been raised in Texas and then shipped in a box to Walmart or Giant Eagle. So trying to give back to the community, it helps us too because these animals are delicious. They're of a higher quality than what you're going to find anywhere else. So that's kind of the heart and soul of what we want to do.
And then there's also products that you just can't find anywhere else, whether it's an esoteric cut of meat that you're not going to find at a supermarket. Or products like the dry cured, the charcuterie program that we have. There are products that we make in the shop here that I can almost guarantee you would not find within a 500-mile radius of the
shop.
There are
versions.
Yes.
At Giant Eagle and Walmart.
Right.
You can get pepperoni.
You get pepperoni, you get bologna.
But it's not going to taste like that. That's a good pepperoni.
But there are chorizos that are from a specific town in Spain.
Let's talk about this board I mean, this is, we were going to get right to cutting pigs, and then I saw this, I was like, I'll hold the phone. We have another video to make. What are some of these cuts here that we're looking at that you're not going to find anywhere else?
So, I mean, we can start with our mortadella, which is bologna, for lack of a better word. But this is an older recipe. There's a little liver in it. We've got pistachios, there's big chunks of pork fat, some green peppercorn. It's just fresher and different than Oscar Mayer. and we've got a cans of olives.
Help yourself, but go for it.
And there was one.
We are missing
what
one.
What was
Genoa?
That was the Genoa, large diameter, Genoa. your canonical Genoa salami.
That was the 10-year-old approved. That one's gone.
That was definitely good, for sure.
And then we have a Cantapalos chorizo. We've got a Pamplona chorizo. And the chorizos are fun because, they're regional Spanish chorizos with varying. They're all very similar. There's a lot of paprika, some spice in them.
So regional, you're saying that the meat you guys have sourced or the recipe
is from a region.
So the meat is local.
Yeah.
The recipes,
right.
Different places.
Yeah,
what's our two spots
all
here?
Old world charcuterie made in Southwest PA with Southwest Pennsylvania animals. Right.
So local produce all the way,
yeah.
But recipes from all over the world.
Exactly.
Which is kind of the best of both worlds.
Absolutely.
You're getting the variety that is out there, but from your local community. I mean, that's what everybody loves.
Like, for example, that Pamplona-style chorizo. Like, most of your canonical Spanish chorizos are going to be all pork with lots of, smoked pimentón or, smoked Spanish paprika. But in Pamplona, that's where you have, the running of the bulls. So, once a year, you have a bunch of well-exercised beef that isn't necessarily ideal for cutting T-bones or ribeyes or something like that. So the primary meat in that chorizo is beef, and it's studded with pork fat and has the pimentón dulce or picante from Spain in there. But I mean, the cow itself is from 3 miles that way or 1 mile that way or 7 miles that way. So you have a hyper-local base product and then imported ingredients, whether herbs and spices and stuff like that.
So that recipe there was their solution to the running of the bulls. We have all this extra meat that's not going to be good steaks.
Right.
They made that.
Exactly.
That is so cool, that story behind that.
Yeah. What else we got there, Jared? You got some pepperoni down there.
Pepperoni. Just an older recipe, pepperoni. The guy in the middle there is one of our original recipes. It's just garlic rosemary. One of our employees just decided to make that. She actually roasted the rosemary to really embolden that flavor, and it really comes out. It's good stuff.
Can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
Please
do. Where do you get all your meat? Where do you get the cows? Do people send you in cows, and then you do the butcher and then send it back to them?
So,
or do you get your own?
No, we source from local farmers that have become friends. We have this whole heritage family of several beef farmers, pork farmers. So what we'll do is we talk to the farmer and we say, hey, we want 2 beef this month. They send them in to a local slaughterhouse. We don't slaughter here. So all of our animals are slaughtered under USDA regulation. And then we get quartered cows and have pigs and whole goats and lamb.
That's good. Wow, that was great.
And we cut them here from the whole quartered cows or whatever. You'll see a half pig pretty soon here.
The top half.
Yeah. I think he's a left half.
Yeah, it's a left.
Well, he's a lefty, so he's happy about
cool. You got a southpaw pig. Yeah, then what do we got here? A mole salami,
yeah.
Based on like your Mexican stewing spices, your mole sauce with cumin and ancho chili powder and guajillo chilies,
cocoa
nibs, cocoa powder,
nice.
Like all that kind of good stuff. It tastes like a Mexican restaurant. It's fantastic.
That's this guy here?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I spent a lot of time in Mexico with my buddies growing up, surfing.
Yeah.
And mole, man, that was... My uncle is Mexican, and so I went with him, and it was like, all right, what is he ordering? I'm going to order that.
Yeah.
Every time, it was mole.
Yeah.
So...
Cool.
Bresaola are these kind of triangular pieces. That's a B5 round, either from a Hereford or a Angus cow. B5 round, just cured in juniper, black pepper, a little bit of rosemary sometimes, and then just literally hung up to dry. There's not much more to it.
Okay, rewind. That is awesome. That is a Mexican party in the mountains.
Give all the credit to Wes, our third, who is not able to be here. He has developed that. Each iteration of these different recipes are either a little bit better or a little bit different.
That is a Mexican party in the mountains.
That's why there was a third seat.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's a third seat.
Yeah.
Spill some for our homie Wes. Wow, that is good, guys. That
yeah, and it's nice too because like as it comes up to your like body temperature, like all those flavors sort of bloom and just fill your mouth.
Oh,
like whenever we put out samples of different things that we have here, I always tell people to eat that last because it's gonna blow out like all your flavor receptors.
Yeah.
Like if you eat that and you follow up with like a fuet or a Tuscan salami or something,
like
yeah, you're not gonna you're just gonna get texture and nothing else because it's just. There are so many flavors in there, and they're all unique, and they all sort of like melt together real nicely.
That is so good.
Wes is the master of flavor around here. He comes up with most of the best recipes, and the things that taste good is probably came from him.
Absolutely.
That's by far, that's my favorite. And I got a soft spot for the Mexican flavors, but
cool.
That one is great. But it's all been fantastic. You mentioned, I mean, we got a cut here from an Ossaba Island pig.
Uh-huh.
You guys are big, obviously, into heritage breeds. Tell me a little. I know we'll learn more as we're cutting up the pigs, but
absolutely.
Why do you guys like working with heritage breeds?
You know, your heritage breeds, they were developed throughout history for particular purposes by particular people, and they have their own characteristics, and generally they were bred to take advantage of either habit or terroir or climate or to produce specific products, whether it's pork fat or beef musculature or a long, you know, broad pork belly, and pretty much like speed of growing to market weight or, you know, water retention weren't qualities that were bred into those animals. So they were bred for quality and resilience and durability and stuff first, and as opposed to your modern hybrid commodity animals, which are just how quickly can you grow to 180 pounds, You know, if it's 3 months, great. If it's 5 months, okay, whatever. And everything else kind of takes a backseat to that. So by using, you know, first local, second heritage breeds, we knowing what the hallmark of the breed is, we can make products that sort of express the value proposition of that thing, whether it's a pig with a really thick buttery fat cap, or a cow or a steer or whatever that doesn't really get to a market weight until later on in its life, that has like a beefy deep rich flavor to it. We're agile enough with the products that we make that we can highlight sort of the benefits of each individual animal.
That is a really good skill to have for a homesteader, or to know somebody with that skill, because things get away from you, plans change. Let's say you have a dairy cow who's a couple years old, and then she's not being rebred, and you do everything you can. Now you got this older cow, or maybe it's a breeder pig, a big old sow that's only going to be good for sausage.
Yep.
You got on the homestead, you have a lot of different animals that you're going to have to come up with a creative way to process and handle them.
Right.
And this is this is ideal. Now, obviously, this is a skill that takes someone like me who's just getting into something isn't going to be able to do this. But finding a place, somebody like you guys who are able to take a product and highlight it instead of hide it. That's one thing I think butchers or hunters do a lot wrong. We go out and we kill this venison, which has some amazing things particular to it.
Absolutely.
And too many guys are like, now douse it in Worcestershire sauce and like hide the flavor.
Whereas soak the back straps and grind it.
Even worse, right? So just learning a little bit more about the meat. Even if you're never like me, I'm never going to do what you guys do. But I find just dabbling, learning a little, as much as you can, will better what you do on the homestead, and then you'll find connections with people.
Yeah.
I think a lot of that is lost because a lot of us grew up getting Walmart steak, and it's only so many things you know to do with a Walmart steak.
Remember
pork chops.
Yeah. Oh, pork chops.
See,
least favorite cut.
We go round and round with people that are used to supermarket pork chops.
Yeah.
They have this like thin, sickly, fat cap. Ugh. And they'll come in here, or they'll comment on some of our Facebook posts, like, oh, there's too much fat on that. I'd never sell a pork chop with that much fat on it. Like, you just don't get it.
You don't know.
That fat is it might take up, like, a third of the of the actual meat on it, but it'll render, and you'll just get these awesome little cracklings, or you can just cut it off and eat it. And the health of that fat, these are healthier animals.
Yeah.
These are animals that are eating good food. These are animals that are well cared for and pastured, and in small quantities, and not kept in a pen that are they're chewing on the tail in front of them. And that fat is actually much better for you than just commodity pork. It's actually proven that it's healthier for you.
The key to all this, right, for the homesteader like me, all the way up to what you guys do, is the knowledge. And you guys are big on sharing. Like you said, there's no secrets here, right?
Absolutely.
What do you guys do for the local community and anybody willing to travel to help teach this stuff?
Well,
we have services.
I mean, you'll be seeing shortly our butchery clinics. We actually feed a full course dinner at this awesome butcher block, family style. Usually big pork roast and a couple sides. You're going to be full. A little bit of charcuterie involved in that. And then we take you back into the cutting room, and we will take apart half of a pig. Sometimes we'll do a lamb occasionally. We did a venison one that was really popular.
Oh, cool.
And we're going to be doing a beef one next week that's sold out.
Yeah, like a hind quarter of beef.
Yeah, so just show them how we break them down. And we don't use, the bandsaw hardly gets used, never gets used on pork. Basically, we only use the bandsaw when we're cutting like T-bones and the bigger chunks of beef. So it's all more heritage style cutting techniques as well. So that kind of goes into the name.
Anybody could do.
We just love stuff like that. But we also do baking clinics.
Yeah, we just started with a baking clinic. Similar thing, a little bit more, not as big of a time commitment, where it's like Saturday afternoon, people come in, everybody has a 5-pound slab of pork belly, and we go through it's not just like, oh, you know, here's a mix that you put in there. It's like, this is how curing works. This is the biology, the chemistry, the physics of it. This is why we're applying these ingredients in the quantities that we are. This is what's going to happen to transform this from raw pork into a finished product. And then they have their, they can select whatever spices and herbs that they want to flavor that with.
Nice.
Custom
base. Yep.
That's
and then,
awesome.
You know, an hour later, they're done. They leave 2 weeks. It cures in the walk-in. And then we smoke that. Repackage it for them, let them know, and they come and pick it up. And it's, I mean, that's been a, sort of like a runaway success over the past 5 months.
Everyone loves our bacon. We dry cure all of our bacon, so it all goes in a vac seal bag with a perfect amount of cure and ingredients, individual bags, and then into the smoker. So it's not like we're brining them.
Right? Yeah.
It takes a long time. It's labor intensive.
But makes a superior product.
Yeah. The product is fantastic. I mean, we just keep ramping it up.
I love that idea because people will leave with everything you guys are doing here. People are going to leave with a story, which means they're going to tell their friends. Mm-hmm. And when their friends hear about it, you're going to get more people here.
Exactly.
And
that's how this is just snowballed.
Yeah.
Like word of mouth at first, and now it's all, you know, it's all social media.
Awesome.
So easy to advertise there. And, you know, we've got some super fans that are just just rallying behind us and telling all their friends. So
speaking of which, if people want to follow you, if they're not local to Pennsylvania, but they want to learn through your social media, what do you guys, when does Block Talk launch?
Let's talk about it. Don't put that on me.
All right.
We're all over Facebook, Heritage Craft Butchers, and on Instagram at Heritage Craft Butchers. We don't do a whole lot of, like, of the informational videos. We might put some of this up
there now. We'll have a few today.
But it's, if you want to see beautiful pictures of our cuts and just kind of the unique things that we're doing here, we try to get on a schedule. We literally have a meeting every Tuesday and block off who's going to post what every single day. So we usually have a post going out every day, just something fun that we're doing.
Definitely should follow their Instagram. Look for the pig snake and say hello from home.
Oh, pig snake. Yeah, big whole pig porchetta. We do pig roast. Debone it all from ankle to wrist.
And Kay and I were looking at that today. We were like, we gotta find a reason to have a party this summer to do a pig snake. So we'll be calling you guys.
We'll provide it.
We try to, like, one of the things that early on, I mean, when you're just starting and you barely have any customers, it was a lot easier. But we got into sort of a pattern of, you know, if people are going to engage with us online or, you know, in email or Facebook or Instagram or whatever, like, we're going to answer their question. Like, people ask a stupid question, not a stupid question, but a simple question, and then they get 1,500 words back because it's like, this is, like, literally what you need to know.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, my God, I can't believe it. Like, thank you.
To the butcher.
We still try to maintain that, and it has grown into a significant amount of labor just to communicate with people. But as much as possible that we can do that, there's no reason not to. I mean, if you ask a question, if we know the answer to it, we're going to tell you what it is.
Yeah. And from now on, you're going to record those answers, and that's your first episode of Block Talk. I'm going to be pushing that, Bob. Executive producer?
Any excuse to buy, like, new computers?
you see
the new Mac Pro's out?
Pack and light.
Yeah. We're very responsive to, like, our social media messages. Yeah. And we get them all day long about simple things like, hey, do you guys have kielbasa today? Yes or no? You know, can I schedule this? Or
awesome.
Can you explain to me what this is that you guys do?
If you guys want to learn more, we'll have links below to your social media stuff. We'll have links below to your website. You guys do private events, right?
Yeah.
Like
indeed.
Parties. You do the
charcuterie like
events like this.
Yep. we do a butcher's table.
Of stuff,
oh, yeah, the
which,
butcher's table.
That's been very popular. This whole table will be covered from edge to edge with pickles, cheeses, all of our charcuterie. A little bit of candies.
You want to come back for pickle day, don't you?
Tiered things with cheeses on them. Like, it's ridiculous.
This table's from the Civil War.
Maybe when I'm off the gluten and dairy-free.
There you go.
Gluten and dairy-free?
Yeah.
All right. Well, no milkshakes or crackers for you. All
right. Well, guys, I could sit here and talk shop all day.
Okay.
We got a half a pig to cut up.
Indeed.
So this video is over, but stay tuned because in the next series, we're going to have a whole playlist here with the Heritage Craft Butchers. We're going to show you the steps, taking a half of a pig, and breaking it down into all the most delicious things that you love about half of a pig or all of a pig. So stay tuned for that. Make sure to subscribe. If you follow the playlist, which will show up right here, follow that playlist, you'll see all the videos here.
Did you like this podcast? As always, there's an extended version of this interview in the Pioneers Only Library. In that version, our butchers talked about using different breeds for different kinds of meat. Bob talked about older chickens and their meat value.
You have a lot of people, I'm sure, that have chicken. I mean, that's an easy foray into homesteading. It's just like having a flock of chickens. And chickens are so diverse. I mean, there's hundreds of breeds. They're all visually distinct.
You can gain access to that episode and all our extended versions by becoming a Pioneer. Click the link in the description of this podcast. It's $5 a month. You can become a Pioneer. You can download the audio versions of all our extended episodes and listen to them like you do all our podcasts as you drive, while you're taking a jog. Go to thisishomesteady.com and click on Shop and then Pioneer Membership. In next week's episode of the Homesteady Podcast, stay tuned. We're going to talk about quitting your job and starting a duck farm. That's coming next in the Homesteady Podcast.